Welcome to the Supplement Engineer Podcast. My name is Robert Chinesky. Joining us today is the co-medical director at LASIK Plus Chicago and the founder of Brain Fuel, Dr. Jerry Horn. Dr. Horn, thank you very much for joining us today. You have a background in ophthalmology, pharmaceutical science, and disruptive drug development. So I'd like to start there. Thank you for joining the show. But give us a little bit of background on yourself and how ophthalmology and how did you get to designing an energy drink RTD cognitive enhancement supplement?
So Robert, it's a privilege to be able to join you today. Absolutely. These are subjects that fascinate me. My background is as a physician. I'm a LASIK surgeon, actually. I've had a chance to do 90,000 procedures in my LASIK career. And I'm a biochem major, and I've had a nerdy passion for pharmaceutical development. You can't say drug development anymore, can you?
Correct.
But so I've had several startups, and I have a drug in phase three right now that's a topical eye drop that restores reading vision reversibly. It's one of three candidates going to the FDA right now. I have an eye whitening drop that I was the inventor of. We licensed to a major pharma company, and it became industry leader in its first year. So I've had a chance to, just take advantage of pharma science a little bit. And then as a LASIK surgeon, I just started playing around with caffeine. No interest in so I had my pharma startups, there's a couple others, and I had my LASIK career, and that's pretty much enough for one person for me. But this whole playing around with caffeine thing got so exciting for me because we all have nerdy ideas. Robert, I know you're a mechanical engineer by background. I see your blogs, I see how awesome you analyze. And so there's so many ways to theoretically conceptualize what should work, what should be good for your brain, what should be good for your body. And then the science gets complicated because data can sort of support, and then what's real, what isn't. So for me, it's the same thing. I have my own ideas about what's going on in our entire universe, in the entire beverage space that we all participate in. What does coffee really mean? What's good about it? What's bad about it? So now I'm thinking, well, wait a second. I'm playing around with caffeine because as a surgeon, energy drinks aren't working for me. Coffee's not really working for me. And so we can get into what the theories were, but they all led to what I call Brain Fuel. We call it a cerebral beverage. We don't think of it as a brand new branding opportunity. I think of it as an evolution from coffees, from the energy drink space, and from nootropics, in the sense that caffeine resonates for all of them. And if I had to pick a spot, I think we're in the functional better for you category just because of how we naturally source and utilize caffeine and the health intended nature, the reference data about what's in Brain Fuel.
Gotcha. So when did the idea for this first start? Because obviously, I mean, caffeine is ubiquitous. We're basically on it from the time, our parents first let us have a soda or a cup of coffee or something like that. So I guess where in your career did the genesis of Brain Fuel start?
It was really simple. So here's what really happens. I get in, I start at 8 a.m. and I finish about 7 p.m. I don't like to take a big break. I don't want to get my brain with have a big lunch kind of, the glycemic spike kind of thing. Anything that's high fatty isn't good for me on a LASIK day. So I like to go. A little bit replenishment at lunch. And then I'm okay. And then on the way home, not so okay. And on a weekend, I'm not that social because I kind of crash. And that was my life. Then I started playing with caffeine and I had some theories about why that's happening to me, which we can get into. And after a while, it probably took over a year, it's like, what the, these theories are actually making sense. They're working. I stopped crashing. This had nothing, everything I've had a chance to do on the pharma side, I did on myself. I'm a red eye guy. I'm a dry eye guy. I'm an N of one experimenter, right? It's only on things you can safely do that on. I don't work with new chemical entities. My niche is repurposing old drugs. Okay. That's on the pharma side. Well, what is caffeine? Yes, this is a CPG product. Brain Fuel's not a drug. It's a CPG product. But caffeine is a drug.
Yes, it is.
It is. So that is the genesis of this. Once I stopped crashing, and because of my privilege and opportunity in the other side of the pharma space, I get to work with these great doctors. We call them KOLs, key opinion leaders in the ophthalmology space, et cetera. I had some of them try this. And they were getting the same kind of results. We all kind of got excited. Okay, and that's really the genesis of it, was a form of POC testing that just started this into me realizing, well, this isn't just me. This isn't just a little lark for me. This to me was, now I'm thinking about it like I'm developing a drug. What else would I do to make it better? That my disruptive nature isn't because like I'm some kind of genius. I'm not some kind of genius. I'm a passionate guy. What makes me disruptive? I don't want to do something if I don't think it's better, because I want it to be better for me.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to live longer. So, you know, so that's kind of the genesis of what's become BrainFuel, that I'm excited to talk to you about. And anything else you might want to talk about?
Yeah. Before we dive deeper into BrainFuel, I want to get a little bit more down deep into, I guess, the disruptive pharmaceutical development. How does that work for the consumers out there? Because even, you know, dietary supplements and pharmaceuticals, they all have a basis kind of in plant medicine, so to speak. Like, we're looking at these natural plant alkaloids, and then from the pharmaceutical side, we're seeing how to make them more bioavailable, how to make them more effective, more potent, you know, whether it's to cure disease, to amplify certain aspects of life, longevity, whatever. So how does it, you know, describe for the listeners out there what exactly disruptive pharmaceutical development is?
In general, in my career first and then BrainFuel, is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's look at eye whitening. So the eye whitening space was crowded. We already have products that whiten eyes, right? Or get rid of redness. They all have a label. Don't use for more than 3 days. So here's the nerdy part. How do they work? Alpha receptors constrict vessels, right?
Right.
Alpha 1 receptors are the ones you give somebody when they're in septic shock and you got to constrict everything and you risk end organ failure. That's a macro view of what eye redness relieving drops did. They were alpha 1 receptors. They constricted everything, not to the extent of when you're in septic shock, but the concept's the same. You're sort of squeezing your circulation down with generalized vasoconstriction. So the label, what would happen when you use them? What happens when you use an alpha 1 constrictor in your nose? Rebound.
Right.
You get inflammation from all that constriction because you've got a stuffed nose, you got a red eye, you put the drop in. The source of that redness, if you have chronic allergies, for example, isn't going away. You're going to do it again and again and again. At some point, you outstrip the physiology that could allow that to have worked successfully. You get more inflammation, more cytokines. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, wait a second. Here's this glaucoma drug we know about in the eye space. That's an alpha 2, one of the strongest alpha 2s, brimonidine. And I'm like, it has a 25% incidence of redness, but I noticed, or maybe I even wouldn't say I noticed, maybe I found some research. This is like 10 years ago now. Mm-hmm. Alpha 2s constrict differently than alpha 1s. They constrict post-capillary venules. Okay. So the interesting thing was, the redness of our eye and probably the congestion in our lungs with COVID, mm-hmm. Okay, that's post-capillary venule leakage. That's how we're designed to work. There's a protein called VE cathedrin. It's a plug that sits in every post-capillary venule of the whole body. And it's incredibly sensitive to problems. As soon as you have a problem, the plug comes out. Your neutrophils and your blood vessels can come out. And also you get vasodilation. So on a minor, on a micro scale in the eye, once you started putting in the alpha 2, why did 25% of people get redness? That's because to put it in the eye, the concentration was 10 times higher because it's got to go through the front of the eye. And an alpha 2 is a ratio of 1 to 2. Even though it's mostly 2, it has some 1. And 1 is like an absolute punch. It doesn't take much to knock out all the vessels and constrict them. So I thought maybe we're getting rebound redness with this alpha 2 because there's enough alpha 1 in this higher concentration product to overcome the 2s. What if I knocked it way down in concentration where you think nothing would work? And that was the, you know, disruptive discovery. It became an incredible whitener. There was no more alpha 1 effect. It doesn't constrict the bigger vessels. It turns out our eye redness, with the exception of congenital large vessels, our eye redness is because these little tiny vessels that are invisible on the surface, there's a zillion of them. It's a giant network. And the alpha 2 comes in, unlike the alpha 1, not only gets rid of the redness, when you decrease the caliber of these venules, your eye seems super white. Like if you imagine someone who has fantastically white teeth because they bleach them great. That's how your eyes look. Mm-hmm. So that was a disruptive because it was healthier. It's a drug that's been around for decades where people take it 3 or 4 times a day at a much lower concentration. And so you were able to get a disruptive benefit. The topical reading drop I developed, normally when you get older like me, you need trifocals, you know, short, medium, and distance.
Right.
If you could make the eye like a camera, if you could constrict the pupils, you get really depth of field and do nothing else, why couldn't you see a flower in the foreground all the way to a mountain and also correct a lot of prescriptions and aberrations optically? And that's what our product is intended to do, our drug's intended to do, that I started out developing. We called it Liquid Vision. We called it PRX. And it's not a done deal. It's not a successful product. It had a very successful phase 2B. Our p-value statistically were like 0.0002, but there's other products with other actives trying to do something a little differently. But certainly PRX is trying to be disruptive. You put a drop in your eye, you see close, you see medium, you see far. It might even correct some of your distance prescriptions. That depends. There's not enough data to know yet. So I guess it was different. So that's the disruptive sense. What about caffeine now? Let's talk about brain fuel. So should I get into that or should
I? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
So the first thing was when I'm just playing around with caffeine, I'm like, okay, let me look at the space. Let me take a serious look at the sector from the point of view of a pharmaceutical person. And what do I see? Well, I see a lot of great things. Let's start out with the positives. First of all, coffee to me is an incredibly healthy thing. Potentially, there's some issues with roasting coffee and some of the, you know, molecules you create, but caffeine resonates historically for a lot of good reasons. A lot of people think you get less heart disease with caffeine, and there's some controversy with long-term caffeine use also, but in general, so we start there. Now let's look at caffeine itself. When you get to an energy drink now, you're taking really the caffeine and putting it in water. So it's not quite the same as coffee. A coffee bean has, as you know, Robert, there's a lot of great things in a coffee bean. Chlorogenic acids, caffeic acid, all kinds of antioxidant molecules, green tea, a lot of good things in it. Let's just take caffeine. So the first thing I did was I took 100 milligrams of caffeine and put it in a glass of water. Made me sick. It just made me sick. So I'm like, well, okay, well, here's what's happening. Caffeine isn't fuel. It's not energy. So why is it when we have coffee or we have an energy drink, when we get energized, we think it's energy, right? Mm-hmm. It's a stimulant. It isn't energy. It isn't fuel. Why does that matter? So the first thing I'm like, okay, I'm putting something, I'm ingesting something. I'm thinking about how does it even get ingested? How does it get absorbed? What's the time frame? I'm a pharmaceutical guy. What's the dose response? Mm-hmm. How fast is it absorbing, peaking? How long is it lasting? What is it delivering? We know it blocks the adenosine receptors in your brain and it does things to make you more alert, but that is basically triggering an increase in your metabolism.
Correct.
Well, okay, if I put you in a Ferrari and you didn't want to go 10 miles an hour, you want it to like really accelerate, and I put no fuel in the tank, it's going to sputter at some point. So I'm looking at all these zero calorie energy drinks. I know they're trendy. I know nobody wants to get fat from a drink, but how do you put hundreds of milligrams of caffeine in a drink and no calories? You're in happenstance mode. You just better hope your body just happens to have what you need. So you have this randomness of how caffeine has been supported, even in coffee, which has one advantage over an energy drink because it has more things that come from the coffee bean. Mm-hmm. So this was my sort of physiologic view that's kind of disruptive. That is, if caffeine is not energy and it's not a fuel, if it's a stimulant, what goes into supporting a stimulant for your brain and for your body? So the first thing is obviously, how do you source the caffeine? Can I get, if I'm going to be disruptive, I'm at least going to ask the question, well, if I think coffee is something good in it that isn't in the energy drink, can I get what's in the coffee? In a roasted coffee, cup of coffee in my non-coffee based product? Well, of course I could. I'll take a green coffee bean. I'm not going to roast it. Mm-hmm. And if you roast it, you could argue there's carcinogens in there from the roast.
Correct.
Acrylamide, et cetera. And so, well, I don't want to roast it anyway. Matter of fact, when I have coffee now, I don't want a dark roast. Right? I just don't want it because of that. But and I'm not saying that makes coffee dangerous by any means. It's probably very low levels. Who knows? But
right.
The thing is, I took advantage of that. So in Brain Fuel, there's naturally sourced caffeine from green coffee beans and from green tea. But that's the molecule. Well, why not take the extracts? Now you have extracts. Now you have to make it taste good. You mm-hmm. have to make it stay in solution. It has to be stable. Those are other problems, right? But that's the genesis of the first component of a disruptive product is let's change how we interact with caffeine. What would happen? What is the stigma of caffeine? Jitters.
Yeah, jitters, anxiety, or crashes.
And anxiety. Cortisol levels spike. And I've experienced insomnia. The opposite of a feeling of well-being. You sort of feel bad. Like I felt bad when I had my 100 milligrams in water. And I'm not saying energy drinks are that bad. They have amino acids in them. They have taurine in them. They have other something. Mm-hmm. But what does it take to support caffeine is the question. And what would happen if you could really support it well? All right. So that is the genesis of what evolved to be Brain Fuel. I don't want to keep talking forever, but I clearly would love to get into more of what I did or found helped me support caffeine better. But I, you know, give you a chance to kind of.
Yeah, no, that's great. And that's where I want to go to next. Before we do that, I want to ask you just anecdotally, based on, I'm always curious how people react to different forms or variations, delivery systems of caffeine. So how would you compare the typical cup of coffee to just something like caffeine anhydrous that you would get in an energy drink, pre-workout supplement, or like a caffeine tab? How, just based on your anecdotal experience, how does it hit for you? How does it last? And then we can go from there.
My personal experience or my pharmaceutical kind of analysis?
Let's do both. First, your anecdotal feedback. Like for me, coffee tends to like hit a little bit more subtle, but it seems to last longer, whereas anhydrous kind of hits you, like kicks you in the teeth longer, but it's faster to wear off.
So I think the party line, which is probably not literally accurate, but figuratively accurate, there's something about coffee that makes it last longer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually think that's technically probably true, but it doesn't matter. It's just what I think. I think what makes it seem to last longer is it supports caffeine better. So caffeine has a half life of 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Well, most people aren't going to get 8 hours of benefit out of an energy drink. I mean, 5 hours is pretty much a long time. 5 hour energy. I'm giving them a plug.
Right.
You know, so basically part of that is you're getting better support when you have your cup of coffee. And so you think it takes longer. I think you said something like it took longer for you to get the effect, or it's more gradual, I think you said.
Yeah.
The better the support, the less of the rise, the spike. The spike is not just how fast, part of it could be how fast caffeine is getting absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
So the chlorogenic acids and the antioxidants and the other things in coffee may help with the absorption somewhat.
Right.
But the more the brain is ready for the caffeine, you also don't get the wired spike that on the way up might be fun.
Mm-hmm.
There's an alertness phase as right. you're going up, but that's before your brain gets fried. I'm exaggerating, but if you didn't sleep all night, you're in oxidative stress. Your brain's not happy. It has a very limited capacity to handle oxidative stress, by the way. It's one pathway, glutamic acid pathway. It's the only pathway the brain has. So there's only so much it's going to do before it's not happy. Not much different than if you studied for a test and crammed and didn't sleep. So anyway, I think the bottom line would be in your cup of coffee, you've got some advantages. And what's going to be drunk? What are you going to drink faster? An energy drink that's refreshing, it's probably cold, or a piping hot cup of coffee. So you're
enjoying
your caffeine more gradually. You got some more things to help support you. So the caffeine has a chance to do more for you mentally, well-being, physically. But at some point, it's just caffeine's your supplement. You're going to outstrip your metabolic support for it. And that limits how good coffee could be for us or other caffeinated products.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's transition then to supporting the caffeine delivery system and the way the body, I guess, metabolizes it. So we know that You know, caffeine gets absorbed relatively quickly. It reaches peak values in the bloodstream around 60, you know, 45 to 60 minutes post-ingestion. And then, like you mentioned earlier, it antagonizes the adenosine receptors. It also stimulates a whole bunch of other fun neurotransmitters in the body, like dopamine, acetylcholine pathways, and so forth. So how did you get around to supporting its metabolization? And I guess, for lack of a better term, you know, enhancing the effects of caffeine.
Okay. So we got blend one. We talked about the caffeine blend.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 300, it then evolved to be 360 milligrams of caffeine. Was not intentional. I started out at 100. The more I supported it, the more I had the coffee effect, more gradual, more mellow rise. Okay, good stuff. And so the bottom line would be, what else did I do to support it? Well, the next step was fuel. Because if you or I, Robert, have a high fatty meal or a zero calorie meal, or we go for a super long run, we had nothing to eat that day, okay? We're going into oxidative stress a lot more than if we hadn't done those things. And oxidative stress is the most fundamental aspect of human physiology that's an interest for me, at least. Mm-hmm. And that simply means every minute we generate ATP, we're oxygenating ourselves, right? We know there's all these Krebs cycle and all these pathways, and oxygen is a double-edged sword, because at the drop of a hat, it forms oxygen is two oxygen molecules cleave together, right? O2. Once they separate, man, it just sucks up electrons. It's like a vacuum cleaner. And what does it do in your brain when it sucks it up? Nothing good. Most neurodegenerative diseases are traced to oxidative stress. What about your heart? What about atherosclerosis? Almost every disease process.
Mm-hmm.
What are the things that make it worse? Anything that gets your metabolism misaligned, right? So lack of sleep is bad. Glucose spikes are bad. High fatty meals are bad. Zero calories are bad. Pollutants are bad. Toxins are bad. We live in a world that's ravaging us over time. So there's a whole nother subject that I'm not going to spend the whole podcast on about antioxidants. They don't cure all these problems. If you do a study on people over 60, you'll find they don't even help that much. And my theory would be, saying it not nicely since I'm over 60, your body's sort of ravaged by oxidative stress by the time you're over 60. You shouldn't assume, if you want to know, like a brain fuel has an incredible antioxidant blend, which I'm going to get to. You shouldn't assume that the test of whether it's working is test it on people that have heart disease and see if you reverse it. That's not the test. The test is, can you prevent it?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like putting a Band-Aid on a knife wound or something.
Exactly. It's too late. So the next blend is the fuel blend. Then there's the antioxidant blend. And that's what I call the brain boosting additive. So the fuel blend is really important because the engine is the Ferrari. That's us. We want the caffeine to hit the accelerator. We want the fuel tank to be clean, pure, D-ribose. Why do I want a it's a low glycemic sugar. It probably lowers glucose levels. Why do I want that? Because a sugar will absorb quickly. Just basic chemistry. Sugar, put sugar in water, it dissolves. So sugar is going to absorb really fast. Why do I want that? I don't want caffeine unsupported. I need something that the brain can use D-ribose, or it can keep its glucose levels stable and use D-ribose somewhere else, whatever. And so that's sort of the, I want short, medium, and long range fuel support for brain fuel.
Mm-hmm.
So D-ribose is short. Then I want hydrolyzed protein. I want peptides. A, great source of energy, glycemically stable. And those amino acids, you see all these amino acids in a drink. Some say that, you know, some have taurine. Some say they have an essential amino acid or two. Well, let's just get a lot of them, because some neurotransmitters are using amino acids as precursors to the extent you can get them into the brain. Branched chain amino acids are not the only thing that's really good for your brain. Far from it. Mm-hmm. So bottom line is, there's a hydrolyzed protein, which I can get into some more. Why I picked which one I picked is another story. And then medium chain triglycerides are fabulous. And not because it's a, you know, it's a keto crazed world, for good reasons, by the way, for a lot of good reasons, but it gives me another fuel source.
Mm-hmm.
Very glucose stable. What happens when you spike glucose, by the way? Even if you're not diabetic, there's insulin resistance to the brain. It's harder to get glucose into your cells when you spike your glucose levels. So I didn't want, my goal was, I want to be as scientifically, physiologically sound as I could be. I want to see what happens if I try to do everything as right as I can, thinking about the physiology of caffeine as a stimulant. Mm-hmm. Oxidative stress is the bad guy. That's the premise of Brain Fuel. I want to stimulate with caffeine. I want to kill oxidative stress so it's minimized or absent. And I want to see what happens to caffeine. What happens to the whole system? So in the process of that, because I had a caffeine blend, I started adding a whole bunch of other good things that were in the green coffee bean and the green tea. Now I've got the fuel blend. I've got D-ribose, which is a good fuel source. I've got hydrolyzed protein. I use hydrolyzed collagen. I use it for one key reason, and that's sort of a trendy thing now, collagen, you know, better for your skin, better for your joints, better for your intestinal mucosa, maybe, side benefits. My premise is things that you might think you have in your body now, like glycine is an amino acid that's one of the precursors for that glutamic acid cycle, right? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe when you use caffeine, you don't have enough glycine to maintain what's in that energy drink. Or in that second or third cup of coffee, maybe your brain supplies of glycine, even though it's a rather plentiful amino acid, maybe be nice to really make sure you have a ton of that when you have Brain Fuel. Collagen is loaded with glycine.
Yeah, I believe it's the first or second most abundant amino acid in collagen, if I'm not mistaken. Thank you. Yeah.
Hydroxyproline and glycine. Right. So you have well over a gram of glycine. You have like 6 grams of protein in Brain Fuel. And hydrolyze, though. Why hydrolyze? We want it to absorb. We don't want to make it hard for you to absorb it.
So more rapid absorption.
Yeah. And so then the MCTs, you know, are interesting because if you could slow the absorption of caffeine through your system, and if you do what coffee does, can you also extend the release? Can you make it spike less? Mm-hmm. I can't say I have the answer to that. I can tell you people – will typically tell you Brain Fuel lasts a long time. It's a slower rise, for sure. I mean, you're getting benefits hours later, faster than, even if 60 minutes is when you think you hit your peak, you're going to notice it over a fairly long period of time, because part of what makes you feel the peak, right, is that resonating stimulus to the metabolism where you're on the edge of not having enough support. You sort of feel something, and it's not always a bad feeling at first. So anyway, so there's the genesis of Brain Fuel. So you start out with a caffeine blend. You have a fuel blend. Now I have to talk about an antioxidant blend, but I'll stop in case you have any other questions.
Like you said, collagen is getting fairly popular in the space for like hair, skin, nails, joint. There's a few studies showing that it might have some benefits as far as cognitive function too, which I think is pretty cool. That's some more emerging data that we're starting to see from some of the neuroscience journals. One thing, though, is that collagen peptides, if you've ever tried it before, for the listeners that have ever tried it, it is very difficult to cover up. It's got a very unique taste to it. So how did y'all, I guess, handle flavoring some of these kind of challenges?
Well, if you just took the ingredients in Brain Fuel and put them in a glass of water, it's not going to be a good experience.
Nope.
There's a lot. Then there's the other side of every drug, which is not a drug, but even every beverage. How do you make it stable? How do you get things into solution? Mm-hmm. Caffeine is also a very bitter molecule.
Yes.
So I guess some of those, I guess, are sort of trade secrets. You know, I mean, every company has got to have some kind of secret sauce to how they make things happen. I mean, I like to think Brain Fuel, not literally, but it's like $15 of ingredients in a $3.99, you know, 12-ounce bottle. But whatever it is, when you drink it, it's clean. It's pure. It's not sediment. It's not things that are not in solution that you have to shake up. That didn't happen on day one, you know. So I guess an answer to your question is, this is from the pharma space, by the way. I can tell you this. Mm-hmm. When you want to solubilize a drug, you especially have heard of nanomicelles, okay? I know you have. Right. Well, what's good about a nanomicelle in a drug, an active ingredient in a drug? You're surrounding it in a way that makes it nanometer sized. And the smaller something is, the easier it gets into solution, potentially. Or you could say the nanomicelle is like a soap. Some of it clusters in an orientation where the fat side of the soap or of the molecule gets on the inside and the water side gets on the outside. So it's soluble. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's things like that that go on. And so the more you can sort of not have clumps, the less bad it's going to taste. Mm-hmm. So there's something like that part of evolving to make brain fuel happen.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. Let's proceed next to the antioxidant blend. Cause there's some interesting choices in here.
So with the antioxidant blend and the brain booster additives, you could argue there's a lot of molecules that have multiple potential effects, right? So, but let's start with the basic ones, vitamin C and E. So I love to talk about vitamin C and E because they've been around a long time. Mm-hmm. There's been good things and bad things published about vitamin C and E, particularly on the good side. A study, you'll find studies where they've actually combined the two and found benefits versus either of them separately in that study, especially mm-hmm. on the cognitive side, or I forgot the stress biomarker that they used. You know, there are some stress biomarkers that you can analyze, oxidative stress biomarkers, where vitamin C and E were great. But where did those studies fail? When you went to people over age 55, that, mm-hmm. all the benefits they saw in a study done in Finland, I don't remember the exact study right now, but I think it was mostly young Finnish women under the age of 50. It's thousands of patients over several years, and they shared all these great health benefits and longevity benefits. And then somebody else said, well, okay, let's see if this is really true. Let's study people that do have heart. I think let's say it prevented heart disease or reduced the morbidity from heart disease in a population that was studied for a long time, thousands of patients. Okay, let's study a bunch of people with heart disease with vitamin C and let's see what happens. Didn't work. And so my theory is, as I alluded to before, that's a different population.
Right.
So it's a whole lot more difficult to have antioxidants work and help you once you've already had damage, right? And, you know, this relates to the brain, Alzheimer's, neurodegenerative processes. So the bottom line is I love vitamin C and E as a preventative, because what does C do? It's a great antioxidant. It sits in the cytoplasm. It's water soluble. Mm-hmm. What's vitamin E do? It sits at the cell membrane. It's lipophilic. It's the opposite side of that soap molecule, right? Well, I'm trying to protect the brain from oxidative stress. And I found data, at least not on brain fuel, by the way, right? On vitamin E, it hangs out by, you know, neurons and neuron cell membranes, mm-hmm. and oxidative stress markers seem to be reduced. So I believe potentially, if something's safe, don't underestimate how critical it is to support, meaning prevent, oxidative stress as much as possible. Now, that doesn't mean I can prove that all the antioxidants that make up brain fuel are going to be the health cure of the century, because I don't know that, but I know there's a lot of good antioxidants in brain fuel. If you start with the chlorogenic acids, we didn't talk about the catechins in tea, epigallic catechin, as long as you have small amounts, because it's liver toxic. If you get to high levels, I only have a little bit of it, of green tea extract. So you have all those good things that are also antioxidants, right? Mm-hmm. Now you take vitamin C and vitamin E, you have a whole spectrum of antioxidant potential. And the C and the E have a benefit when you keep it something in solution too. They sort of protect each other. Mm-hmm. There's some data that suggests from an oxidation perspective. You don't want to have all these ingredients. And if you look at, well, I'm going to get to creatine in a minute, but you know this because I was looking at your blogs. Creatine in water is a lot different than creatine in a powder, because within minutes, your creatine levels are dropping.
Right.
It doesn't stay stable. So all of that means that the C and E, I think, have benefits in terms of stability in water and in terms of being good for our body in ways that I think are maybe partially responsible for what I feel when I drink brain fuel. I'm not going to be able to prove that. The mechanism of action of a drug, we call it the MOA.
Right.
That's the inventor's theory. Mm-hmm. What do you study when you take it to market to the FDA? Its safety and its efficacy. Studying and proving the theory, that's another 10 or 20 million. I mean, that's a challenging thing to do. And that's what I love about Dave Asprey and Super Coffee and Bullet Coffee, because he was the first biohacker. What is a biohacker to me? someone who really gets science, who's really intelligent about analyzing data, but doesn't have $50 million to study every single thing that might be true. And they find connections that seem to be true. The fact that it's a bigger keto world today might be thanks to people like Dave Asprey. And I think there's a lot of value in that. I mean, we learned something. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that takes us through the antioxidant blend.
Yeah. With the creatine, how did y'all, I guess, stabilize it? Since you mentioned, you know, the creatine eventually, the more acidic, then the higher temperature that the either the ambient conditions or the temperature of the fluid, the more acidic the solution is, the faster the degradation rate of creatine that takes place. So are y'all using a certain form of creatine? Or what did y'all do, I guess, to make sure it to ensure its stability in solution?
Super great question. And I know this is your bailiwick. So basically what I would say is it's a form of creatine monohydrate. Mm-hmm. You encapsulate it. You take that soap thing. It's like the nanomicelle concept. You encapsulate it. So it stays in solution.
Okay.
On the proper side, we would call it emulsifying.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. With the beetroot extract, how is that displayed on the label of it? Because I'm trying to look for the supplement packs. And I guess why choose that versus some of the other, polyphenol or antioxidant-rich plant extracts that are out on the market or available?
Okay. So I love getting great questions, Robert. It's such a super scientifically sharp question for me to have to address, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're tracking like I am, which you are, I already have a zillion polyphenols in brain fuel.
Right.
I want different kinds of antioxidants. And I only have so much you can, I already got arguably $15 in a $3.99 bottle. So I've got polyphenols from the green coffee bean. I've got catechins from the green tea. Now I got vitamin C. Now I got vitamin E. I'm not looking for more polyphenols. I'm not smart enough to know if once I already have a sort of a ton of polyphenols, if another source of plant polyphenols will make that much difference, I'd rather look at what other antioxidants might be valuable. Mm-hmm. The pigments in beetroot powder are terrific antioxidants. The red pigment.
Right.
Whatever it is, beta-luane or something. So I like that. Now, it didn't hurt that if you look at data on beetroot powder, you know, a lot of endurance athletes like beetroot powder, as you know. But, you know, there's vasodilation, there's nitrous oxide effects, and some people, if you Google search data on beetroot powder and brain health, and go to Google Scholar, by the way, right? If you want to get some decent references, you see some really interesting things about beetroot powder supporting brain health.
Cool. One thing I want to ask you just from the, before we touch on the last part, the last, you know, matrix of ingredients and brain fuel, since we're on the subject of antioxidants, I wanted to get your opinion just as an ophthalmologist in like the gaming supplement space and just some general health space. We've seen lutein and zeaxanthine start to pop up in some of these like gaming formulas because gamers are, you know, zoned in, or people that are working from home a lot are staring at screens emitting blue light all day. What is your opinion on those? You know, is it something that's valuable? Is it necessary? Or is it more marketing hype from those other products that may be putting them in there?
You know, I don't like to be critical about things that sell and that might have value because, you know, getting the real answer to that question isn't so easy. But I'd separate your question into two parts. Lutein pigments. So lutein pigments, as you know, are the pigments you find in spinach, for example, right? Dark green kind of pigments, dark colored kind of pigments in food. And lutein pigments, where you really have a benefit, the back of your eye, the macula, that part of your eye, you got velocity of blood flowing through these little capillaries at ridiculous speeds. And as you get older, there's degeneration going on. And so somebody was smart enough to figure out that when you have a thicker, what's called, there's a pigmented layer at the back of your eye. There's a pigmented layer. Visible light has a place to absorb, mm-hmm. right? So that the thicker the pigmented layer, the less degeneration they saw. Well, what is that pigmented layer? It's called lutein pigment. So somebody said, wait a second, there's lutein pigments in spinach and other things. What if we made a vitamin with lutein pigment in it? Well, before we even know if it works or not, it became a $1 billion drug because as ophthalmologist, I'm not going to wait for some seminal study. I know a thicker lutein layer is good for you, and I know there's lutein in those vitamins. I'm going to tell my patient, I have nothing else to offer you. Your retina looks a little mottled. Try these vitamins. So that's as much as I could say about that part of it. Mm-hmm. I think there's probably a benefit. eating spinach, luteum pigment, probably good for the health of the back of your eye. The front of your eye, now that's a whole different subject on blue light, right? Blue light versus red light. Blue light, short wavelength. The sky is blue, water is blue. The more something wants to scare, I used to tell my kids all the time they're growing up, why is this guy, ask them, why is the sky blue? Why is water blue? Because I'm such a nerd. They don't really care why anymore. But the whole point is whatever scatters light, the more it scatters it, the bluer it could look. Mm-hmm. Because blue wavelengths are short. What does that mean to us when we wear blue blockers or something for your monitor? Your monitor is sort of, you can adjust it, but it's sort of a source of cool light. The whiter your light source, there's warm and cool, right? The tungsten K values.
Right.
The cooler it is, the whiter it is, the bluer it is. Mm-hmm. The bluer it is, the more the light is scattering. Well, do your eyes feel better when there's less glare and less light scatter? Yeah. Probably the contrast is better with blue blockers. Right. Is it healthier? I don't know. But I think there's a there. I like to wear blue tint on my sunglasses, but I don't think I see better. I have better mm-hmm. contrast when there's more of an amber tint. Yeah. So that's a personal thing, but you're getting less light scatter and better contrast, including if you're a gamer and you know, either you're fun or your living's depending on that, you can probably get more eye fatigue, the more glare, the more blue light's coming off that screen. Right. So to me, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Would blue blockers be something that people would just start investing in as far as like long-term eye health and to prevent against eye degradation?
I don't think the blue light is a whole lot. Maybe I would pretty much say no. If anything, you've got a lens that's absorbing a lot of light too. Mm-hmm. The lens of your eyes absorbing a lot of light. So I don't know that there's a major health benefit. It'd be nice if everything turned out to have a major health benefit, but I think some things are more theoretical or comfort valuable or like better contrast has a value to us. By the way, back to the gamers. Reminds me of something about Brainfield that I find really interesting. How many times in life, whether you use caffeine or not, or for some other point in your life, you feel like you're just on, like you feel sharp. You feel mentally really clear.
Yep.
And yet you feel like you could stay still. Right. But yet you feel like you're ready to pounce, like really can move like a UFC fighter probably needs to be. That's the kind of dynamic that I think you can see with brain fuel. Mm-hmm. And I think a gamer, that could be fantastic. Right. And for a lot of things, it could be fantastic. But if you aren't gaming and you're just sitting around in your backyard looking at flowers, I don't think you're going to really experience the best of brain fuel. Because if you don't do something that normally makes your brain tired or cause oxidative stress, you don't know what the bandwidth of brain fuel even is. And I will add to that, I don't really know what happens to people that never drink caffeine, never taste caffeine, because it's hard to get them to try brain fuel. When I'm developing brain fuel, my friends, a lot of them won't even drink coffee. Or if they do, they won't touch an energy drink. And I tell them, well, brain fuel is not really an energy drink, guys. How much caffeine? 360 milligrams. Well, I'll have one sip. It's a whole other concept, you know.
Oh yeah. With that, let's delve into the brain boosting complex, because you've got we've got zinc, glycine, and theanine in there, and the data around theanine and caffeine is pretty solid as far as its ability to enhance focus, attention, and you know, things like that. The way I describe it to people that don't really like to nerd out and get into the science of stuff is that it kind of refines the stimulating effects of caffeine, kind of harnesses that focus and makes it a more productive focus. So you're not just kind of like hamster or a soul that's looking for a new nut everywhere.
Well, the thing about L-theanine that I like, it's a fan of all the amino acids, it's probably the one with the most antioxidant potential. Mm-hmm. And I'm all about that part. Every time since I started developing brain fuel, every time I do something, I'll tend to try to like power through the wall, so to speak, of my day at some point, you know, where I can barely keep my eyes open, but I got to keep going because I'm interested in something, yet I'm tired. I'm in oxidative stress up the yin yang. That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Or that wired crash. That's what it feels like. Right. So it's another antioxidant to me. I can't have enough of them, you know? So I thought L-theanine was a great thing to add Two reasons you allude to. People think it has a calming effect. You know, and is that a serotonin thing? I don't know exactly what it is, but I like the fact that it's a really good antioxidant for an amino acid.
How much is in there per serving, or can you disclose that? Or give us a ballpark, I guess. You said there was 360 caffeine.
It's so. Certainly nothing in the gram level. It's okay. it's sub a gram.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's so much high quantity as combination of elements benefit. And it's not so much high volume of it, just combination of elements. Maybe it adds something. I can't honestly tell you that I've broken down how much difference it makes. I noticed when I added vitamin E, though, that our product got better. I can't say that as easily about some of the other things, other than they work well together.
Mm-hmm. And then as far as zinc and glycine, obviously we touched a little bit on glycine earlier. I guess why the addition of zinc?
Not because it's trendy. You know, zinc as an antiviral is an interesting conversation. Mm-hmm. That's a COVID conversation that I probably shouldn't have on this podcast. But you can get zinc into your cells. You'd be doing something really good for them. But that's not why we've got zinc. Zinc is a trace element, as you know, and it's basically facilitates a lot of enzymatic processes in the body.
Yes.
Google search zinc and brain health, and it's a positive. And again, I don't want to find out what happens if I want brain fuel to really resonate for a lot of people. And I think 360 milligrams it's really 344 plus a little more that comes from the green coffee, bean, and tea. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, I don't want to find out I missed something that was safe to add and I don't have enough zinc. And even though some people have lower levels of zinc, some people don't. How much of that's affected by... What if you have an 8 or a 10-hour day where caffeine is actually doing something good for you? I want to support the whole thing. So I thought zinc was, if I think it's got no harm and I can add it and I can still make it affordable, then it's on my list, checklist to look into, and zinc seems to be a good one.
Gotcha. Hey, you mentioned something earlier, a few minutes ago, that if somebody is into gaming or they're working really hard, they'll be able to notice the benefits of brain fuel. And if they're out in their backyard, just, you know, watching the grass grow or looking at flowers or something, that you really won't notice the potency or the effects or how it's able to improve your situation. And that's something I try to discuss or relate to people, because, you know, it's brain fuel is falling into that nootropic category where you're trying to enhance productivity, mental clarity, focus, your ability to just get stuff done during the day. And so often you'll hear somebody will say, I took a nootropic and it didn't make me do anything. I just sat around on the sofa all day. I'm thinking, you've got to put in a little bit of effort there. You can't just, you know, lounge around watching Netflix, pop a nootropic, and expect to be like on the ethereal plane that you're just buzzing away with work. You've got to at least like get the body primed, get your CNS primed, that you're in the work mode, sit down and actually start sipping on the thing. And then you'll notice the things start to potentiate and spiral, and, you know, you'll get the train rolling that way.
Well, I mean, that leads me to a sort of, a little bit of a tangent, but there's a really well-known poker player. He was one of the great teachers, you know, I think probably in the country. Mm-hmm. And we interviewed him for Brain Fuel because we wanted a poker player, right? It's just that combination of stress and mental clarity. And I'm looking at this guy. I thought I was looking at a world-class athlete. The guy mm-hmm. is 5% body fat. I'm talking to the guy. How does he live? Low glycemic, very low sugar, lots of protein, MCTs, and he has 4 cups of coffee a day. I'm like, he's as close to brain fuel as you're going to get. Probably eats a lot of vegetables. So he's getting a lot of antioxidants. You can do what brain fuel does, not maybe literally, but you could get close to it if you were like the perfect person on the perfect diet and you're regimented about what you do physically. That's a human being at one extreme. Mm-hmm. Your couch potato, what I'm hoping will happen with not just brain fuel, but functional beverages in general, functional better for you beverages in general. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that this trend to healthier ingredients is going to mean people who are depressed, people who have anxiety, high cortisol levels, they don't have a feeling of well-being. I mean, if it isn't brain fuel, why won't products evolve in the functional better for you category that help? A lot of it's nutritional. There's drugs and nutrition. Dr. Esselstyn is a famous cardiologist, the Esselstyn diet. You know what he said? just stick to your green vegetables. Here's 8 cruciferous vegetables to choose from. He shows a slide. He goes, there's hundreds of medicine compounds in these vegetables. So yes, I'm a CPG product, but let's think about it that way. So maybe we could have people who even are not as tuned in as you and I would like them to be. Maybe something good can happen to them. Maybe if they feel better, maybe their hormonal reactions in terms of appetite are changed. Maybe they'll eat a little better after they have something that's healthier for you, whether it's brain fuel or something else, you know, and maybe it'll evolve. We're talking about what this product does. You try it one time. What if you just tried something that's got healthy ingredients in every day? You probably do that anyway. But so anyway, I think there's a whole opportunity here that, you know, coffee started. And I think that the categories are exploding into. Nootropics are just exploding right now. Better for you beverages are exploding right now. And I think there's a reason.
Agreed. What do you foresee as some of the challenges in trying to, I guess, chisel away at some of the people that are, I guess, habitual, just regular energy drink users and trying to get them to use a or switch to a more enlightened approach to a functional beverage that's something more than purely just caffeine and taurine?
I think the answer to that has way more to do with where society is at. You know, look at if in reality, if brain fuel was came around 10 years ago, nobody would even be interested. 10 years ago, we wouldn't have been interested. There's already been a huge disruption in the marketplace. There's a place for everything. You know, the energy drinks are still doing very well. Have they lost their market share? Yeah. How much did that mean to them? You know, a product that sells $1 billion a year lost 4% market share. It's still a great product for people who want that. But there's a lot of people who are evolving to, they wanted it because energy is life. So we all want energy. Where are you going to get it from? Well, if you're not drinking a cup of coffee, you're going to get it from an energy drink. Well, then you're going to say, well, wait a second. Now I can have a nootropic supplement. Mm-hmm. So now they're taking off. Well, wait a second, I can get it from a functional better for you beverage. There's other options here. So why would I want to pick the option that's maybe got less healthy ingredients? I'm not putting down energy drinks at all. Maybe has less healthy ingredients, or at least it's not designed quite the same way. So I think, again, it reminds me of drug development. You know, you come up with this great drug. It doesn't mean other competitors go out of business. Mm-hmm. Laser vision correction discovers how to correct prescriptions. It doesn't mean doctors don't sell glasses and contacts anymore. Right. We need better options. It's a huge mass of people out there that want to live longer and be healthy. Some of them are going to start getting on that bandwagon when they're 18, more of them probably when they're 25. And as people get past the stigma of caffeine with brain fuel, you're going to start to see the 40 somethings and 50 and 60 somethings maybe get more excited. So I don't really think it has to be. In the old days, it was all about branding. Mm-hmm. Most products had, in the energy drink space, you had caffeine, you had some amino acids, and you branded. Right. Now, functional better for you is because there's a different class of ingredients. So I think there's room for everybody, and I hope there's room for brain fuel. I think it's a pretty good product.
Yeah. One thing that, you know, it's the old rank and file of energy drinks were laden with, you know, 20, 30 grams of sugar with it. Then we went through the whole zero calorie era of energy drinks and functional beverages. And now we're seeing some that may have some clean sources of energy in it. Yours has MCTs, D-ribose, as we mentioned, and it's got 5 grams of protein. So it's going to contain a few amount of calories. How do you go about reaching out to the consumer and saying, hey, just because this has calories doesn't make it fattening. It's not dangerous. It's not going to, you know, rot your teeth and rot your internal organs and all of that. How do you, I guess from your side, is when you're trying to market the beverage, how do you, you know, assuage the fears of people that are scared that a beverage may contain some calories?
I don't think, well, I have a slight difference of opinion on this. I don't think people are afraid of 100 calories or 110. Mm-hmm. I think it's a knee-jerk reflex. If I want to stay thin and fit, here's a zero-calorie drink. I'll drink it if I think there's no reason not to. Mm-hmm. But now if all of a sudden I'm like, I'm a supermom and I'm on fumes sometimes because I have so much I have to do. And I want to get through my day and feel great, maybe zero calories isn't going to deliver that for me. So I think you're going to have a spectrum here. I don't think there's an education factor that needs to happen. 100 calories is nothing. It's 4 grams of D-ribose. There's almost no sugar in it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Listen, back to the energy drinks. 55 grams of carbs is a lot of sugar. And it's high fructose corn syrup. Glucose, glycemic spike, insulin resistance. Then the caffeine hits. It's like you put sludge in your engine. And of course, you're not going to feel as good as long. At least I wouldn't think. So I just think that coincidence, pandemic, people are tracking. They're reading ingredients. They're looking for healthier. They're just not interested in old style branding anymore. I think things are changing. So
there's a, y'all currently have four flavors up on the wait list for Brain Fuel. So we got Limitless Berry, Thrive Ice, Alpha Punch, Victory Bliss. Since I guess the origins of this were steeped in coffee, do you foresee maybe a coffee flavored one coming out in the future?
So this originally was a coffee based product. It was a cold brew. And one of my mentors said, you know, there's plenty of coffee out there. By the way, yeah. I'm going to give a plug to Bullet Coffee and Super Coffee, because I think those are pretty good directions to go for a beverage, for a coffee-based beverage. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was more, there's more utility in trying to bring what's really healthy into a non-coffee base. You have more options on the coffee side.
Right.
You know, so we certainly could go that direction. But I think there's a lot of other directions Brain Fuel can go to also.
When is the, so we've got the wait list up on the website right now, and I'm going to include links to everything in the show notes for the listeners that are interested in checking this out. When do you see it launching? And then is this going to be strictly direct to consumer through either the website or Amazon, or is it, are y'all going to look to get into brick and mortar as well, or currently working on, I guess, partnerships to do that?
I think because of the pandemic, a lot of things were delayed for a lot of outlets, and we're getting a lot of traction right now. We're launching in, I think, the third week of November. We will be available online, BrainFuel, BrainFuel.com, you know, with Shopify option. We also have a fulfillment partner on Amazon who's fantastic. So it'll be available online, and our fulfillment partner also supplies some retail outlets on their e-commerce side. So there'll be a fairly significant availability online. And we have some major retail partners that were looking at us, and some pilot testing we're going to do this fall on the brick and mortar side. Clearly, you know, we got to walk before you run. So online availability comes first. I see brick and mortar coming maybe Q2 next year kind of thing.
Cool. And as somebody that's developed pharmaceuticals, run through clinical trials and all of that, do you foresee, you know, one day, maybe down the line, a year or two from now, ever getting some, you know, RCTs run on Brain Fuel to, you know, compare it maybe against placebo or just regular coffee, just to see how it, you know, it pans out and what benefits you could see, or what additional benefits you could see above and beyond caffeine supplementation only?
Oh my God. So my board has people on it on the medical side. From my pharma side, we're all about that. That's the study. I saw a study on, I forgot what the supplement was. They studied it for 2 years to see if it prevented cognitive decline. It was a $2 million study. Now, at some point, that study has to be done.
Yeah.
From my point of view. But how about, you know, getting a – I had a group of professional mountain bikers take Brain Fuel, and some of them set PRs. I mean, there's lots of ways to do comparatives. Is it physical? Is it cognitive? Mm-hmm. The more you want to get into true health benefits, less morbidity, the more expensive, the more objective you got to be, the more blinded the testing has to be, the higher the N has to be. It's almost – like saying, I wish we could take a CPG product and put it through at least the phase two FDA trial. Well, those cost a lot of money. So I do think the value is there. The intent is there, not just for me. Mm-hmm. I think anybody who thought they had a really healthy product would like to go there. Yeah. You know, there's an omega-3. There's an omega-3 fatty acid that went through an FDA trial on thousands of people. It is now... And they documented much reduced cardiovascular disease with this omega-3. Now, is an omega-3 that I buy at home as good? It's a very clinically pure omega-3, and they went through a phase 3 trial, and it's a huge, huge success for that reason. So there is great value and reasons that it's expensive to go through an FDA trial, but you got to get there.
Right. For the listeners out there, can you maybe, I guess, expound on some of the reasons why these clinical trials cost so much? Because so often in the supplement space specifically, there's a succinct lack of studies either in humans. We've got cell culture studies, we've got rodent models and all these things. And so often we hear, well, there's just not funding for it, or the studies are too expensive. And obviously the NIH and the FDA aren't going to be shelling out millions of dollars for just, you know, for somebody to increase their rep PRs on a squat or bench press or deadlift or, you know, game for three more hours above and beyond what they're normally gaming. So for somebody that's been, you know, steeped in the research side and done the clinical trials and put chemicals in there, what is the stop gaps and why are these things so expensive?
Okay, great. Another great question, Robert. So the first thing is there's an awful lot of studies that work really well in mice. There's an awful lot of drugs that have cured cancer and Alzheimer's and you name it in rodents and other small species. It didn't do diddly squat in humans as far as we could tell. So the first thing is we don't have a good model outside of humans. Mm-hmm. Humans are expensive. Humans are busy. They don't necessarily want to volunteer. Just the cost and then the statistics. This is a little bit of a COVID conversation for me because here's the statistics. If you had a drug that reduced COVID risk, and let's use this as an example of testing a CPG product to see if it reduced cognitive decline or had other health benefit, right? What does that study look like from an FDA trial perspective that makes it so expensive? You have to show a p-value, a probability value that it couldn't have happened by happenstance, meaning your control. Controls are notoriously nasty to deal with. Try to do, you know, some kind of anti-anxiety drug and look at placebo effects. You know, so the bottom line would be, now you want to study this on humans. What's the probability that your drug worked well? Well, there was this, I'm going to use COVID as an example. There was a study in Wuhan, China, on 86 people. And I remember the statistics, 38%, it was a, you know, not high morbidity COVID. These people just had general illness, but PO2 levels, et cetera, not too bad. So in the 7 day or something period, 38% of them on controls got well in 7 days. On a drug I won't mention because it's too controversial right now, 50% got well. Well, that's almost 40% better.
Right.
That is, from an FDA perspective, a failed trial. It is statistically insignificant. If I was to show you that compared to placebo, 8 out of 10 people improved, that's a failed trial. It has to be 95%.
Interesting.
The p-value has to be less than 0.05. Right. That's a very tough bar. I'm not saying it's all bad. If it was up to me, which it never will be, and I ran the FDA, I'd say, make sure the drug is safe. Let doctors figure out in the marketplace, because you can have a great drug and not get that p-value. If you want to get a p-value on a vaccine, you got to study 30,000 people. Try to do that on a drug. That's why it's billions of dollars. So academic science, pandemic science, and CPG science don't intersect.
Correct. Gotcha. That works. Yeah, it's, I wish there was, I don't know, like a general fund or just like, we need somebody on like Bill Gates' stature that just has billions of dollars just to kind of throw, just put it into sports nutrition, cognitive enhancement, longevity, all the biohacking sphere and all of that stuff. And we could really get, you know, push it forward and get some really quality studies, because a new ingredient comes out to the market, we might get one human study, but it's usually like 8 people and it doesn't have, I mean, I don't put much credence in those kind of very, very low quality studies.
Here's what's going to happen. And not to be too commercially sensitive about this, but for someone like me on the pharma side, if the day comes that I can do a 2-year study and I can show there's less cognitive decline with brain fuel, don't you think I'd want to do that? It would be commercially beneficial. So I do think as you get into the health, the problem is how healthy have most of our sectors really been? Nootropics are starting to change that. Mm-hmm. But other than generalized nutrition, product-wise on the CPG space, it's a lot of branding, not literally, but historically, and it's evolving. And as you get into a healthier base of products, you can start to ask those questions. Whoa, what would happen if someone took this every day? Would they have less heart disease? would they have less of this or less of that? You can't find those studies. The problem with academic science for brain fuel, people don't want to study brain fuel. They want to study just the vitamin C or just the E or just the combination. Yeah. My whole philosophy, for what it's worth, is iterative. If you could do something with one ingredient that makes you just a little bit better and you took it every day, now you had another one that just does the same thing. To me, there's more chance of preventing Alzheimer's with something like that does that for cognitive decline. Just a little bit from that, each one thing by itself wouldn't move the needle, than trying to find the super drug that cures Alzheimer's when it's caused by so much physiologic damage and oxidative stress. So I think, you know, we're always evolving. We know more in the CPG space now than we did 10 years ago, more than 5 years ago. There's more healthy products.
Right.
But I think it's just going to keep on going. And eventually our drugs to be healthy are going to come from the CPG space because they're the prophylactic ones.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Dr. Horn, we've reached the end of our conversation, sir. This has been a blast. Thank you for making time to do this today. And this is the part where you can shamelessly plug anything and everything about Brain Fuel.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for all your time. Brain Fuel, it is a labor of love. I do think, you know, I'm not biased when I say this, but I am. It's a damn healthy product. And I think a lot of people are going to get a lot of benefit, a lot of sense of well-being, mood elevation, just a general feeling of being energized that just drifts you off into one of those nights where you weren't that tired, but you slept good. Mm-hmm. And wake up the next morning and see how you feel. So everyone's different, right? Everyone has to try every product they're excited about for themselves. But I think Brain Fuel, you know, has a unique opportunity here to be valuable.
Excellent. I'll include links to everything in the show notes. And thank you again, Dr. Horn, for making time today. This was a blast.
Thank you. I've loved it.
Awesome.
Take care.
You too.